Hello and welcome to the Dental Student Vibes Podcast. This is episode number one of the Dental Student Vibes Podcast, and I'm your host, Seth Kalish. Today we're going to be discussing step-by-step what is needed to apply to dental school and some tips and tricks of how to get accepted to the dental school of your dreams. I'm here today with Anthony Wallish, George Jarakis, Matt Havis, and Kasim Naqvi. Be sure to hit that subscribe button and do me a favor and share this with at least one other person today. You can hit us up on Instagram at dental.student.vibes and on Twitter at DSVpodcast and then on Facebook at Dental Student Vibes. So, fellas, today we're trying to figure out how do you get into the dental school of your dreams? I want to hear how each of you did. And first of all, what is the most important thing when we're looking at how to get into dental school?
It has to be your GPA. That's kind of like the foundation for everything that's going on with your application. Any school that you're going to apply to is going to see your transcripts and your grades. And it's 4 years of hard work, so that I would definitely say is your number one thing to focus on when you're applying and trying to get into dental school.
Right. So definitely GPA, that's going to be the number one thing that they look at when they open up your application. First thing is GPA. And what's usually a GPA that you need to have? What range is here?
I would say, you know, most schools look at your overall and your science GPA, and at least a 3.3 for overall GPA. It depends on the school, but the higher you can do, definitely the better chance of getting into any school that you want to.
Right. And so what I think most cutoffs are what, around 3.2 for at least the is that for the cumulative GPA, and then of course they want to see a good science GPA as well, right? So what are some of the classes that they include in the science GPA?
Okay, so there's a couple different options that you have, but these are the main courses that you do want to have taken care of. You'll be looking at biology, general chemistry, organic chemistry, and I believe biochemistry is also a requirement for a number of schools now. So that might have been a bit of a change than before. So that's definitely something you want to take a look at. And then also you'll have to have a minimum of 6 hours of English courses as well. And then on top of that, obviously, you can take some upper level science courses, which will really strengthen your GPA a lot. And on top of that, of course, a lot of the schools want to see something that you've demonstrated that you can handle, like a rigorous course as well.
Right, right. So maybe some of those additional bio courses or science courses, such as physiology, microbiology, physics, I think all of these usually tie into your science GPA, and definitely dental schools like to see that you have these. I would say one of the biggest ones that has helped us as dental students is anatomy.
That it has. It's very important in dental school. People don't realize it because you're focusing only on one specific part of the body, but everything ties together, especially in dentistry. So anatomy, physiology, I recommend microbiology to anyone because you need to know these certain things when you're going to be handling patients and trying to fix all their problems.
People seeing all these like classes, all this material for the first time, they usually struggle because it's so condensed. You move so fast your first semester. So anyone learning anatomy for the first time, they always struggle because they have to learn so much so quickly, and it's a different language because everything's usually in Latin, and they just dedicate so much time to it.
I didn't know you could speak Latin.
I can. Now pectoralis can. Major.
Took him a couple of weeks, but he's there now.
What was your favorite muscle, George?
Latissimus dorsi.
He hits those lats hard at the gym.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. You like those lat pull downs.
Kasim said his favorite was the Cream Master.
The Cream Master reflex is quite nice. I elicit the Cream Master reflex a couple times here and there.
Okay, so GPA, definitely big on the list.
In terms of GPA and applying and everything, this life takes sacrifice. I mean, early in life, I'm talking about. Like, you'll see as you go on, once you apply and you get in, life gets easier. But, excuse me, once I was, like, an undergrad, my whole life was dedicated towards getting into dental school because this is serious. And I was told at a young age, wanting to go become a dentist, once you commit to the life, you sacrifice now, but then you play and you earn, and then you live the life of Riley later versus, I mean, how a lot of people do it in college where they live it up.
We live in a very short-term society, but this is a long-term goal that you're going towards. And it's not just GPA. It's so many other factors, but it's definitely a good foundation for any any applicant.
I love the way you paraphrase that, Anthony, because I think, you know, at the end of the day, we have 4 years of undergrad for most people, 4 years of dental school. So it is a sacrifice that you make, but like we were saying, it's a long-term investment. Mm-hmm. So you'll reap the rewards later on down the road. Sometimes it might not feel like it, and sometimes you'll see your friends going out and having a good time, going to the gym, like doing things that you might want to be doing, but then you're stuck at home or in the library. But you don't necessarily have to make it a bad thing. It's just something that you're doing to invest into your future. And that's such an important thing for all you guys out there.
And you can also find things to balance. So you don't always have to avoid going out or not doing anything fun. One of the things I learned in dental school is you can still do everything you like, but you got to be more efficient with it.
Time management.
I think that's one of the things about us, like this group that we have here, is that we're not all just, we don't have our noses in the books 24/7. We are well-rounded individuals, and we will discuss that later on, how important that is. But, you know, at the same time, you do have to have your priorities in order.
Right. All right, fellas. So let's talk numbers here. So when we say GPA high, what do we mean by GPA high here?
Well, I would say at the very minimum, you got to be looking at a 3.3 overall. I know a lot of schools also will look for a science GPA. I know my school specifically wanted a 3.2. I don't know how other schools are. But, you know, the higher your GPA, definitely the better, because it makes you more qualified. And if a school is looking at you compared to another applicant, GPA is probably going to be one of the first things they're going to compare you with.
Right. And then, like you said, you got to keep that science high. I think one of the things that Cosmo and I did that, of course, helped our GPA is to do a post-bac, do a master's. One of the things you can do, even if you graduate and you haven't completed all your prereqs, you can still do the any science prereqs you need to do to boost your GPA, but also to boost your science GPA. But even if it's not a prereq for getting into dental school, you can also just take extra science classes after you're done to maybe, if the bare minimum is a 3.3, or if it's even a 3.0 for some schools and you're at a 2.94, you can take an extra post-bac class. You know, $500 for tuition for the semester, but you know, it's worth it if you can get over that threshold of a 3.0, and then now dental schools will actually look at you. Otherwise, they'll literally just throw your application out. That's just how it goes.
The biggest thing I would say, sorry to interrupt you, Anthony. The biggest thing I would say is that you just got to get yourself in the ballgame. Mm-hmm. That's what it boils down to, ultimately, in my opinion, is that there's a certain number of varieties. And, you know, we're going to be talking about not just GPA, but a number of other different factors that factor into it. Like Seth was saying, I wanted to touch on it, was the post-bac and the master's. Sometimes some good things about those things, they also prepare you for dental school as well. So for myself personally, I felt like I didn't have a steeper learning curve coming into dental school. And it was extremely beneficial for me doing the post-bac classes, just because you do sort of get that leg up in a certain way, because you've been exposed to higher level, like higher graduate level, higher science courses and things like that. But that being said, you know, these guys who are around me who haven't done post-bac or master's like us, they've done just fine and they're doing fantastic. Just, it's all about the work ethic, in my opinion.
Don't let this deter you, though.
Yeah.
Don't think that you have to go from your bachelor's degree to a master's or a post-bac. You could easily go from your bachelor's into your professional school. I did that. George has done that as well, and so did Anthony, and we're thriving in dental school.
I think the great thing about this is there's no blueprint for it necessarily. Like, there's not one specific way where you have to do it. You can customize it your own way. You know, if you feel like you want to do a master's just because you want to do a master's, or you want to have that background, by all means do it. If you don't want to and you just want to go straight into it, there's nothing wrong with that. It's not like you're going to be at an advantage or a disadvantage doing either. Just as long as you're committed to the process and you make sure you do the things you have to do, it should work out for you.
Yeah, one of the other things when we originally thought about doing this podcast was, we thought it was unique because all of us have a unique, different story. And one of our main motivations to doing the podcast was helping out you guys. And you guys can always feel free to message us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and we'll be happy to answer any questions you guys might have, because like I said, all of us have unique stories. And I think we have a lot of beneficial innovation that will help you guys down the line.
Mm-hmm. Right. So if you don't have the best GPA in the world, let's say you're kind of in the hole. If you do have a 3.8 or 3.9, that's awesome. You're going to get a lot of interviews. Good for you. But let's say one of our listeners is in the hole right now and they don't have the best GPA. Mm-hmm. What are some other things that they can do to help their application?
Well, like I said, like you can kind of customize this your own way. Let's say you don't have the best GPA, but you're still a very motivated student who wants to help others and go into dental school and progress in that career path. One thing that I would suggest is focus heavy on the DAT, because that's definitely one of the other items that any dental school is going to look at. It is a test specifically for dental schools to compare their applicants. So a DAT is important, but especially for someone who might not be on the higher scale in terms of GPA, you got to focus on your DAT and try to do as best as you can.
Right.
Yeah, I agree. I think the two main things are most likely it's your DAT and your GPA. I had an average GPA, but the DAT, and it really shows to the dental schools that you apply to. Yeah.
And there's like, you know, we've all taken it, obviously, because we're here. There's certain study guides that you can use. I know DAT Destroyer was great, but if you guys ever have any questions, you can ask us about them. There's many ways to go about this, to study for this exam. It's a long exam, but it's definitely worth it if you can do well on it.
All right, guys. So what were the hardest parts of the DAT for you? And what did you guys do to really get successful after just practicing so many times? I know for me personally, it was doing DAT boot camp. Mm-hmm. DAT boot camp is an online course, and basically you're just doing practice test after practice test. And the nice thing is that they will tell you a breakdown of all the answers, why the answer is what it is. And what's nice is that they give you, you can even do a full practice test. You can do the whole test all at once. It's timed. And it's probably the best simulation of the real test that I could find.
I agree. I also was lucky enough to get a free Kaplan course for the DAT. I found DAT Bootcamp, which I paid for, to be way more worthwhile than Kaplan.
It was, yeah. DAT Bootcamp was very, very good. And I think one thing I noticed, and this might not apply to everyone, I don't know, I want to hear it from you guys as well, was that when I took the full practice exams on DAT Bootcamp, my score tended to be, I think it was like a point or two higher when I actually took the real DAT. So the difficulty level on DAT practice tests was really, really accurate.
Yes, it was definitely, they advertise it that way.
Yeah.
The main thing, I've actually read about this, and companies will do that specifically to make you want to buy their products more. So when you take a practice exam and then you get, let's say, I don't know, a 17, you're really on track to score an 18 or 19 on the actual exam when it comes to game time, like on the actual test day, because they don't want you to get a high score and say, oh, I'm done. They want you to continue to buy their products, use it. It's a business. That's what they're in the business for, is to try to get you the score you need by making as much money as they can.
But they're good at what they do.
They are very good. I vouch for DAT Bootcamp. I use them as well. And on a little bit about my score. So I scored the highest on the perceptual abilities. I hit a 22, which I was very proud of. And when I started, I was shooting for like 15s because I was just really bad at it. And then I eventually got to the point using DAT Bootcamp, I found that to be the best resource for the perceptual abilities. It was very hard. It took a lot of time and a lot of effort, but once you get good at it, it's almost fun to do the perceptual abilities section, in 100% my opinion.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
Let me just say, there's no paid advertisement for DAT Bootcamp here. We're not getting any compensation.
George, do you use DAT Bootcamp as well?
Yeah, so I used it like almost religiously every single day for 90 days. I studied a ton, and like they said before, don't get discouraged when you're taking the test on DAT Bootcamp if that's what you decide to do, because I got 17s and 18s on some of my tests, and on the actual test I ended up getting a 21, and I think in the long run, thank you. In the long run it really helped out. And when it comes to the perceptual test, it did get fun after a while, I'll be honest. If I were you, I'd spend maybe 15 minutes a day doing that.
What other resources did you guys use?
I also used DAT Destroyer. That was very, very difficult in my opinion.
That was the hardest
thing. I heard that one is probably the most difficult, but it prepares you really, really well.
It does.
So again, don't get discouraged if you get a lot of questions wrong like I did. I think I did relatively well on the DAT, but that being said, the DAT Destroyer kind of like scared me a little bit, but it really did help a lot, especially with the QR section as well, because for some reason, math is my kryptonite, but Destroyer helped me so much with that.
I would say, branching off, the hardest thing for me was finding the time to study, because when I was in school, I took a full course load, usually a couple credits more to try to graduate, and I would find like studying on the weekends would be good, but then you also want to have fun, you want to branch out, you want to relax. So I would go from my coursework straight to studying for DAT. So the motivation itself is like, it takes a lot, you have to dig deep and find it. So if you can do that, you will definitely set yourself up for success.
One thing I had a conversation with Seth about the other day was actually studying for the DAT. So one thing I'd like to hear maybe from a couple of us is what was like your schedule like when you were studying? Because I think you said that you were out of school, right, Seth?
Right.
When you studied. So you weren't doing it during undergrad.
No, like me. I was done.
So what was like your typical like studying schedule?
So like every day I would wake up, probably get this Panera around 7 or 8 a.m. I'd have all my food packed for the day and I would just sit there, grind. But here's the thing. I took the DAT twice, right? Mm-hmm. And the first time I did Chad's videos, I did DAT Destroyer, I did all of that. Mm-hmm. And I studied over a span of like 4 or 5 months. And then basically I didn't think I was going to be ready. But when the time that I took the DAT that I was successful, the main thing is that I only studied for 3 weeks. Like I said, I got there, studied from 7 a.m. to closing, which is, I don't know, 9 or 10 p.m. And I just hit it every single day. And I feel like if you don't spread out your studying time, I mean, this is just for me personally, but like if you don't spread it out too much, you'll be good and you'll still remember everything. Because I think the first time when I tried to study for this test, I would forget stuff from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. You guys remember when you're studying for too long?
Mm-hmm.
But how did you study, Cosm?
Yeah, for me, it was kind of a similar schedule, but I think one thing I sort of regretted was it's really hard to stay focused sometimes when you're studying for the DAT, especially if you're not in like a school environment, because I was also out of school when I was doing it. So it was kind of hard to stay motivated in a way to do it. But I think once you kind of figure out a plan and hit goals for each day, like that's how I did it. That's so I did maybe 2 hours for bio one day, and then I knew if I was burnt out from bio, because it required quite a lot of reading, in my opinion. And sometimes it's kind of hard to retain that information. So, you know, kind of, okay, 2 hours, I'm done, because I know after that, I'm not retaining any information. Mm-hmm. Then I'd hit like general chemistry or something after that. And then after that, I'd hit organic chemistry and then finish the day with PAT. And on boot camp, they have a lot of generators. So you're not consistently seeing different practice exams the whole time. Or like sometimes it'll be like specified to a specific subject, but you'll see so many different variable questions. And I think that's what kind of keeps me on my toes. Because for me, I get motivation based off of getting questions wrong. So I'm like, okay, I'm gonna tackle that portion and be like, okay, how can I progress towards where I wanna be at? So it was kind of, mine was a bit of a generic schedule, kind of similar to yours. And then it was within a 3 month span. So some people can do it pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And it's all dependent on how you guys learn. And hopefully during your undergrad time, you've kind of sort of figured out what's the best way for you to learn effectively, because all of us are different. So don't get discouraged if someone's doing it for 3 months. Don't get discouraged if someone's doing it for 3 weeks.
Right. So what do you guys think? What would you say is an average score? What would you say is a competitive score in the DAT?
Well, I feel like it's only increasing as time progresses. I know for me, an average score was an 18. Now I hear people getting 20s.
Yeah, right. That's exactly what I
So it really, I guess, depends on what year you're trying to go into it. I mean, I took my DAT in 2017, so it could be different for people upcoming, I guess. But the higher, the better, obviously.
Yeah. What would you say is a cutoff point where this score is too low, you need to improve?
I would recommend for anyone at least under an 18 to retake it. And even if you get under that, definitely consider it. I only took mine once. I was lucky to go through an early acceptance program, so I just had certain requirements to meet. But you should definitely try to shoot for the highest score, and especially if you're trying to go into a top school, it doesn't hurt you to take it more than once.
Yeah, I think 20s at least in every category, yeah. That's really good. Like, that would be a good competitive solid score.
And just to clarify on one thing, just to backtrack, the perception is not counted towards your overall score.
The PAT?
Yes, the PAT. So for people who have trouble with certain sections, because they were like, I was very good at certain sections of the PAT, and there were others that I didn't excel in. It's more for the school just to see how good your perception is. That's not going towards your overall score. So focus more on your sciences, and then, you know, like stuff like reading and math. Like, you got to just do it whether you want to do it or not. But as long as you focus on your bios and your chems and stuff like that, the perception is kind of just like a secondary thing.
Right. Focus on it, though. I mean, don't just say, oh, if it doesn't count towards my composite score and it's not averaged in, don't do it, because schools do look at that. They say, if he can't spatially recognize things, that he shouldn't belong in dentistry, because we do a lot of spatial recognition. Mm-hmm. We do a lot of shapes, you know, having to fill in things with your mind that you don't see, because dentistry is a lot of touch, a lot of feeling and everything. So make sure that you can at least do well in it. You don't want to have a 15 on that and then a 22 score, then they say, well, they didn't study. And it shows a lack of study and a lack of time put towards that. See, you have to be well-rounded.
Right. All right, guys. Well, if you want some more advice on DAT, we're going to have a whole episode dedicated to just that. So today we're just touching the surface, trying to get through everything. We got a lot of content for you guys today. Okay, so what else do you guys think is one of the most important ways to get into dental school? What are some other keys to focus on, such as what, shadowing, volunteering? What are your guys' experience with those?
I know certain schools do require shadowing requirements, a certain number of hours. I recommend it to anybody and everybody, especially because dentistry is such a wide field where there's different types of dentistry that you can go shadow, whether it's, you know, you want to do just a general dentist, or you want to go into endo or ortho or pedo or whatever. Really just kind of makes that light bulb in your head pop. I think you should do it mainly for that reason, just to see what you like, and then also just to get that experience under your belt.
Yeah, I think like one of the things that I saw was it kind of ignites your passion as well when you shadow, and then you also kind of get to see like the day-to-day like lifestyle of a dentist as well.
Definitely.
And I think a lot of university, especially when I was interviewing, they're not necessarily looking for, okay, this person did 150 hours, this person did 350, so we're gonna expect the person with 350 hours. Mm-hmm. One thing that I think is really nice and unique about the interview is that you're able to kind of incorporate your personal experiences into it, and they wanna see what you gauged out of it. So it's not necessarily about competing as many hours as you can. You wanna just keep getting the thorough experiences, because like Anthony said, there's so many different specialties out there. And it's for your own benefit as well, you know, figuring out what you like as well.
Mm-hmm. Right. And they like to see consistency. So, I mean, let's say you go for one weekend and you shadow for 10 hours. I mean, that's great and everything. But when you're actually filling out the application, do you guys remember it says you have an activities application, mm-hmm. and it says you choose your category for shadowing or for volunteering, and you put in, I shadowed from this date until this date, and then you put your total amount of hours. So, I mean, you can really, obviously it's going to look better. Oh, I have shadowed with this doctor for 2 years now, and I'm really, you know, I got to know him really well. And so I think one of the most important things about the job shadowing is you've got some good stories to tell, especially at your interview. I think that's the most important thing.
Absolutely.
But you get that experience, and then you actually have something to talk about, because you can tell. I mean, I could tell when I went to my interviews, like, there are some people that couldn't really talk about dentistry, and they didn't really know, like, necessarily what were the most important things. Mm-hmm. And it shows that you have a leg up on people.
It makes you stand out, and not to scare people with numbers, but most schools are getting thousands of applicants each term.
Absolutely.
And they're accepting, you know, 100, 200 people, depending on how big your school could be. So just having that experience and being able to have a conversation with an actual dentist or someone who works in the dental field at that school, it could just make you stand out a little more. That's all.
I would say, going back to what Seth said about how people go to interviews, they don't have much to say. I like to call those people the academics. And what I mean by that is they have 4.0 GPAs. They score 28s or whatever they get on the DAT. But then they have no people skills. They can't associate because they didn't go out. They didn't do extracurriculars. They didn't partake in clubs. They didn't connect with people. They didn't shadow that much. And that hurts your chances. Sure, you may have, like, you know, great credentials on paper, but they're looking for people. They're not looking for robots that can take a test and get 100. They want to see how you're going to associate with patients, if you can connect with them. That's what they're looking for. So the point of all this is to get out, make connections, meet people. I mean, a good letter of recommendation from a dentist goes a long way. I had my dentist from when I was just a little kid. He wrote me a letter and he read it to me after the application process. And it was really touching seeing what he wrote about me rather than just saying, oh, this is a good prospective dentist. He'll do great for the field. He didn't write that. He wrote about how I connect with people, how it would be a disservice for me not to be a dentist for this, the values that I have to give to others. So the hearing about like how somebody else in power and a successful dentist thinks of you, an aspiring dentist, really goes a long way. I would say definitely shadow, get out, do unique things. Don't just say, oh, I'm going to shadow. Start a club. Bring a club to your school, whatever. You could be at the biggest university. I was at UCF. I brought a club there. We did fundraising. We did all this stuff. It was called Operation Smile. We dealt with raising money for cleft lip, cleft palate surgeries in third world countries. And that gets you recognized. Make yourself set apart and unique from your competition, because you are in competition with whoever else is applying. So
I 100% agree with you, Matt. George, did you shadow any other specialties, or is it just general dentists?
I only shadow general dentists, but I would like to add, when it comes to shadowing, I would say put quality over quantity. So you can have all the hours in the world, but if you didn't get a great experience out of it, then it might not mean anything.
I think you should really try and look for like one story or one experience that you could tell at the interview. That I think that's one of the things that really helped me set myself apart from everybody else at the interview. One of the other things that Matt brought up, you can even like take pictures. If you're volunteering or if you're shadowing, you can like take pictures with the doctor, with the kids that you're volunteering with, whatever, and put that in a scrapbook and just bring it to the interview. So for example, I didn't do that, but I started a nonprofit and we did volunteering. We did some fundraising for Puerto Rico. And I even had business cards, and I brought this up as a topic of conversation at the interview. And the interviewer wanted to see my business card. And I was like, oh, absolutely. Of course I brought them to the interview, and she loved that. And from what I was told later on, she told me that she marked me number one in the interview. So I think it's really, you know, how you set yourself apart. There's nothing that says anywhere that you can't bring pictures or any sort of thing to the interview.
Exactly.
Like I've even heard of people bringing like stuff that they've knit or drawn to the interview to showcase their hand skills.
Like Matt was saying, they don't want robots, you know. They want people who do have fun, because dentistry is a fun field. Mm-hmm. You know, like you can have a really good time. You want to go in with a smile on your face. And that's like one of the benefits that shadowing provides you. And they want to see people who are really passionate about the field. And based off of my assumptions, if you guys are listening, I'm sure you're very passionate about the field, just like us. You know, like we're having such a good time doing this, and we have a good time in school as well. You know, we're not robots. We do have a daily life, and you can have fun while you're doing everything as well.
You know, it is professional school and you do have to take it seriously. And there's this whole stigma behind education, how important, you know, academics are. But you can talk to our professors. You can talk to people in the dental field. There's so much more to it. That's really just scratching the whole surface of it. I mean, you really do have to have, you know, interests and passions and just, you know, personality. You know, be able to talk to... If you're not able to talk to your patients, how are you really going to be able to do what you want to do?
Yeah, and like effective delivery is so important as well. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the things that I really noticed when I was shadowing was... you can see how the dentist interacts with them. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you change your style based off of the type of patient as well too. So you're getting good experience either way.
Very simply put, when your job becomes work, find a new job. you should always love what you do. You should want to wake up in the morning and you should tell yourself, I can't wait to get to the office today and help people. That's what I do. That's what motivates me to get through school, all these didactic courses, and get me to where I want to be as a dentist to help people and make an impact.
Right. So give me a quick step-by-step. How do you shadow somebody? What do you do? Let's say you're in school, you don't have any shadowing hours, you're going to be applying this upcoming cycle. Mm-hmm. Uh-oh, I need some shadowing hours. What am I doing?
I feel like I'm a little more outgoing than the average person, so I have no problem calling a dentist and just being like, hey, like, I'm a student, I want to see what you do, can I come in and visit? But if you feel a little uncomfortable doing that, which is completely understandable, I would recommend just talking to your actual dentist or maybe like your parents' dentist or a family member's dentist. You know, a lot of people do actually have dentists in their families as well or friends of family, and just try to, anyone you know, I think that would be a good starting point.
Just
and,
like branch
and
out.
Then from there on, yeah. You know, find out what you like. Oh, I want to see this next. And just Google, you know, just search and call. The worst thing someone could do is say no to
you. Yeah, that's exactly what I did. Google is like the best resource I think you can find. And you guys, if some of you are uncomfortable, like Anthony says, very understandable, but you guys would be so surprised how willing dentists are to help. That was what I was shocked about.
Yeah.
So just go out there, Google a couple dentists in your local area, just visit the office. If you're uncomfortable, send them an email or call them on
call
the phone.
Call them. Yeah. Here's what's going to happen when you call. You dial the number. Hi, thanks for calling Dr. Nakvi's office. This is the receptionist speaking, and all you have to say is, hi, I'd like to speak to the office manager. Or if it is the office manager already, you just say, hi, my name is so-and-so, and I'm with whatever school, and I'm looking for a shadowing opportunity with this dentist. And they'll either say, oh, yeah, of course, no problem. Let me either put him on the phone, or they'll just say, hold on 1 second, I'll go ask him. He's in the operatory. They'll come back. And then they'll say, okay, what dates are you available to come in? Or they'll tell you when they're available. And you just come in. And I mean, usually you would wear something nice, you know, wear either a dress shirt and tie or ladies, I don't know, something nice.
dress
Or you can even just ask the office manager or whoever what to wear. Maybe it's even scrubs. So go out, buy yourself a pair of scrubs and just go in there. Sometimes they'll even let you do stuff. So it's not hard at all to set up that experience.
Also, I mean, going back to the scrubs, don't freak out because you don't have to buy the most expensive scrubs. You don't have to get like the Grey's Anatomy, Medcator, anything. You can literally go to Walmart and you can get like a $5 pair of scrubs. That's all you need. And like it'll come into so much use down the line.
And these dentists will just be so, I guess, thrilled that you're even reaching out to them. This is really a field of community where people want to work together and help each other.
Yeah.
You know, it seems so competitive going into it, and then you get into it, and you're kind of like, oh, people actually want to help each other. And it's more of a pay-it-forward industry, I think, of dentistry. So just the fact that you're even reaching out, I mean, even if you don't have scrubs, even if there's something that's going wrong and that's making you nervous and makes you feel like, oh, maybe I shouldn't do this, like, they will work around that. They will accommodate to you. They're just happy to help, honestly.
Absolutely, 100%.
I mean, you don't always have to call either. I mean, speaking for myself, I'm an analog guy in this digital world, so I don donned a shirt and tie. And I started knocking on doors. But you got to read the room. If you got this young gun straight out of dental school that you're trying to shadow, give him a call. But some of the older guys, more proper, that still show up in a suit and tie to work at his office, show up to his office, dress nice, go with a purpose, be confident. It's the biggest thing you can do. And then ask, be like, hey, listen, I need a shadow. And more often than not, they'll say, yeah, dentists are really cool because they were in your position. They were in our position at some point. And they remember that because the life is hard early on. Mm-hmm. So they'll easily say, come on in, come shadow, come on in, be professional, you know, and just show up with a purpose to learn. That's the biggest thing I could tell you.
All right, guys. Thanks for listening to part one of how to get into the dental school of your dreams. Stay tuned for part two, where we go more in depth and touch on some more topics of how to get into whatever dental school you want to get into. Thanks for listening.